This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by Braintree. Even the best mobile app won't work without the right payments API, and that's where the Braintree V.0 SDK comes in. One amazingly simple integration gives you every way to pay. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/androidcentral. Everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 258 for Friday, October 16th, 2015. Welcome to the show. We got a lot going on today. If I sound excessively excited, it is for several reasons. One is, it's Friday. And that makes me happy. And apparently I've never seen a Friday before. But more important is, we have finally pushed out an updated version of the Android Central app. And to celebrate that fact, we brought Mike Wolfson, who did all the work. He did everything. I just kind of got in his way every now and then. And Mike is a Google developer expert, and we figured it'd be fun to have Mike, you know, tell a little bit what goes into this stuff. And I learned a lot doing it. So, Mike, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. And it's been a super fun project to be involved in. So I'm excited we're shipped. It's always super fun to ship code of any sort, and when you're shipping it to, you know, something big with a big community, it's all the better.
I like it. So we've got Mike here, we've got Russell Holly as well.
Hey,
what's going on?
Yo, you know, everything and nothing at the same time.
We were just making fun of you because you don't have the beer fridge back there anymore.
I don't. I've so much room in my office now.
You're no longer sponsored by Bud Light.
No longer sponsored by Bud Light. I'm no longer hashtag up for whatever.
Yeah, they dropped him after that last discussion, last podcast.
Apparently, I was a disappointment to my friends and family.
He has a cookie jar, a ViewMaster, and a box with a Phoenix down in it.
Russell is a wizard.
I am a wizard.
Jerry Hildenbrand, Andrew Martinick. So we do this every week. If it is your first time joining us, welcome. So this one's going to be a little fun. It's a little different. We don't get guests very often. We're like the crazy house down the street that nobody ever wants to come to, I think.
Well, there was that time the sheriff had to come in.
That's true. So yes, once a week, live-ish, more or less. Let's just get to it. So Mike, you are a Google developer expert. Actually, back up. You and I met. I think it was the last time I was out at Twit in Petaluma when we did All About Android right before Google I.O.
Yeah, right. So that was fun. We met, it was, I guess, 5 months ago, so we kicked this whole thing off, which was fun.
So what is a Google developer expert?
Okay, so basically that is, there are Google developer experts in tons of different technology areas. I happen to be one based in Android. So what that means is I get to say, I am expert at Android, and Google endorses me as such. Really, where the reason that I became this was twofold. My technical expertise, which I'm good, but I don't think that that's the sole reason. The second reason is kind of community. Being on the All About Android show, I wrote a book, different other things, kind of where you share your knowledge with the world. That's what Google developer experts are all about. So we just kind of go out in the world and spread our knowledge, just kind of help the community.
And song and dance, or?
Well, I do a lot of presentations, Droid Cons and things like that. So
you did Droid Con New York recently, right?
I did. Yeah. And what I talked about is actually really totally what I was doing for Android Central, is using the new material support libraries, which are kind of all new. Well, they've been out a year and a half, but they've really evolved quite a bit. But using the support libraries, which work on all versions of Android, to implement all these new material controls. So it's really empowering because we now have all these standard tools that developers never had before. We use third-party tools or, had to try to roll our own. And, of course, then when we're rolling our own, everything looks different than it should, because these standards are real hard to understand. They talk about all these tiny, minute details. Things need to be 8 dp from the side and 14 dp from here. And now that we have all these controls, it's all kind of just magically done for us.
it's not quite to the point, I think, where I could do it. And that, I mean, every time I look at doing this stuff, it's like, all right, fine. I mean, they're doing all this stuff for you in some respects. But, I mean, there's still a lot of looking at the code that you have to do, right? It's not quite plug and play yet.
Actually, let's talk about an example, and it's a really good example, and is the side nav pattern. So that's really common across all platforms, iOS and Android. Big problem before is that side nav is used for who knows what. People are doing lots of things other than navigation in there. They are not following any sort of consistent navigation patterns. So that's one problem. It's the wild, wild west. The second problem is Google has defined these very clear standards for that nav bar, how they want it to look. And so we have that now in the new app. It's exactly, you know, like the material design standard. The cool thing is that whole control, and that includes all the color changes when you select something, is all done for me by Android. I have just defined in an XML file the menu structure, and it lays out everything for me.
And so that's one of the things we talk about when we say new APIs and a new version of Android is these new tools that you can now use that are built into this version of the operating system, but not necessarily the older ones. So how does that work going backwards then?
Okay, cool. That's a great thing. So actually, this is something called App Compat. Well, there's a couple of different variety of frameworks. It's not that important. But what's important is App Compat is designed to work on older versions of Android. So all of these new material controls they've released, and I'm not going to list them all, but there's all sorts of color, automatic coloring. There's a new action bar. And just so people know that this action bar pattern that we've had for 7 years, there wasn't a control until 2 years ago for developers to use. That's why we use like Action Bar Sherlock, you know, from Jake Wharton. So now there's a new toolbar. So all these things are now built in, and they're available to use on basically, you know, all versions of Android. Most developers now are kind of supporting 4.0 and up, but these all support all the way back to Gingerbread.
So here's a fair question from Wendell in the Q&A already. Why is the ASE app still targeting Lollipop API instead of Marshmallow? Are we even targeting Lollipop? I thought we were still older than that.
Well, the answer is because that just came out. And the whole intention of this release was to kind of put the framework down for getting all these app compat libraries in place so that we could just fundamentally get the framework down, not change any of the functionality, so that then we can...
That's the crazy part, right? Because like I saw how much work you were putting into this, and it's like, all right, there's nothing new. It looks different.
Yeah, and clearly, that was by intention. We really, my goal was that at least for this first round, we would not introduce any functional regressions. That, you know, it took a lot of work to make sure that happened, but that was the goal.
It sounds easier than I think it was because we broke a lot of things in the process of just redesigning him, just making him look different. And so that's kind of the next step is, all right, let's really start reworking the code and then start getting search in there, which I know we've been promising forever, and some of the other things. And you've got some cool ideas as well, you know, for stuff that you want to add in there that I didn't even have on my radar at all. So, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot to come, I think, not to tease too much.
And push notifications is another one that I think people will really like.
Yeah, I saw somebody today was complaining about that, actually. Please don't give us notifications on every story. Look, if we give you notifications, you're going to have control over them. I wouldn't want to be notified of every story we put out. That's just a bad idea. I want to be able to notify Andrew of every story we put out.
I get plenty of personal notifications.
Well, Andrew, I mean, what about you guys? Because you've been seeing this in drips and drabs as we've been progressing. I mean, because you're not a developer either. Like, does this... Nope. Feel like it's an entirely new app or just kind of reskinned or?
Of course I got to look at a couple of early on versions but I didn't get the full progression. You know, I didn't get to see, you know, little bits and pieces come in. The first version that I saw was already a pretty dramatic change and very material style. But the biggest thing was I just saw, which I guess it was in a good way because then I could focus on all the little things. I saw little things get tuned up So, of course, you know, things weren't broken anymore and things like that. But to see it all come together and to be in the end, it all feels like it's all part of one app. It doesn't at all feel like we just bolted a new design on top of an old app. I mean, it feels like this is, you know, all complete. It doesn't feel like we have some parts that are just lingering and kind of old looking. You know, some apps do have that, especially when a new version of Android comes out and developers race to throw in like this new design. They'll throw in a fab or a new drawer or something, and it just looks really weird because it doesn't meet up with the rest of the app. But I could say, especially what we turned out today, feels complete in itself.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned fabs because we don't have any floating action buttons. Yeah, Mike, is that a code thing? We're just waiting to update that code, or was it a functionality thing? Like, all right, you know, we could stick something there now. But
actually, it's kind of a really good thing that let's talk about that for a second. So, you know, I think it took a long time to get this material redesign ramped up. If we had tried to do a fab before we met, it would have been very difficult because I would have been forced to, and I did, create my own fab out of a, you know, circle image. And it was a real problem. But at Google I.O., when we met, they released a fab control now in the app Compat Lives. So it's actually not code. It's really simple. It was, again, one of those things that we just kind of didn't want to introduce anything new quite yet. But now that we have that control, we can put that control basically anywhere, and it's going to be like have the right shadows, have the right kind of animations, like when... I don't know if you've seen these lollipop apps that where the fab scrolls with other items on the screen.
Yeah.
So now that's all built into this fab control that we have. If we tried to do this before, it wouldn't have looked good, just like Andrew was mentioning. And then it wouldn't have had all this magic, you know, animation and stuff that's just built in now. So really powerful for the developer because all those little nuanced details really add up to a really great experience, and I'm no longer responsible for like trying to animate that or do the heavy lifting.
Are you happy with it, Russell? Do you like it? Be honest.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the things that make it feel like a new app, even though we haven't gained anything in functionality, is the way that material design and the underlying code just generally performs better. I mean, it's, you know, smoother transitions, better scrolling, you know, opening things isn't you know, always you know, kind of janky when you switch to you know, Chrome to open something, or when you go to share something. It just generally feels like a new application, even though we haven't gained functionality. And that, I think, was the best part, was just the overall performance increase.
I tell you what's really surprising to me, and I was a huge advocate of the dark theme before, but I'm not using it now. And it's funny, just, I mean, because this is still a very light theme that's on there, but it doesn't seem overly bright to me, you know? Does that make sense?
It's lots of greens.
It is lots of greens, and maybe that's what helps. It is a lot of green. Maybe it's I guess maybe the cards aren't just pure white anymore. And I think that just really makes a difference. I like it. I like the purple and green. I know people don't like it, but I'm a big, you know, Batman fan from the 80s, so.
Good time to talk real quick about colors in Material, which is something that the Material Design spec defines. So it gives us a palette. You know, Matthias Duarte and his legion of awesome designers spent hours and hours agonizing over a palette of 16 colors that each have 10 different gradients within them. So we were confined to that. So that's kind of cool in that, you know, we were able to just kind of pick that color real simple. The other thing is in regards to another thing that Material Design defines, and that's a color palette for an app. So we defined for Android Central, there's two different shades of green and then this purple accent color. I only define that one place in the code, and the app compat or the system itself colors the rest of those things for me, which is really awesome, right? So that purple, that accent color that starts to appear everywhere is totally automatic.
I mean, it's not unlike when you go to like the home improvement store and you're looking at paint, and in fact, I'm doing that lately as well. and you say, all right, I like this color. Here are some other colors that go nicely with it. I mean, it's that exact same sort of thing. I think maybe it's a little more strict than that, but But yeah, I like not having to like try to figure out what goes to what, you know?
I really like all the automatic color generation, the branding throughout the app, which again is all done for me automatically.
So you just plug in like the one hex number and the rest kind of fills itself in?
Again, to tie it back to the navigation view that is all automatically generated, if you'll notice when we select one of the items and it gives you context where you are, that is a color. That is done by the system for me. That's automatically colored per, you know, this hex value I put somewhere. So this material design spec, the app compat itself is doing all this heavy lifting for me and, you know, putting my theme throughout the app. So it's pretty cool because we have, you know, five different flavors of the different, you know, Connectedly and the iMore app. And we use different color palettes for each of those, but they, you know, are themed appropriately in the whole, in all the different apps. So it's pretty dramatic if you look at them side by side.
Jerry, you're being all quiet.
I'm just sitting here thinking I am so glad we got somebody this good to build that app, because I had a nightmare of Phil showing up at my house with a case of beer saying, hey, we need you to try to fix this app. You can kind of be developer. But I love the direction we're going. I think, and, you know, I'm not a mobile software developer by any means, but you want to change the AP or change the UI and add features. You can't dump everything at once. And I like the way we've updated using Google's new tools. The users get a feel for a great new design, a new look, and easier to do the same functionality. And we can roll out the planned features we have, and they'll be a good addition on top without a startling. You never want your users to open an app after an update and say, oh my God, what happened? And that's the way we're going, and I really like it.
What are we missing? I mean, we know we're missing some functionality. Search is the big one. Notifications are the big one.
The thing we maintain multi-screen support.
We've got Samsung in there. We need to add LG at some point, I think. Although, yeah, I mean, are we all in agreement that Google at some point is going to bake that in as well?
There you go.
Yeah. I think especially with the new the Pixel C.
But then we'll have to see what's going to happen there. The next Samsung phone that comes out, well, it's probably going to continue to have Samsung's own take on it, at least for a couple versions, because they don't want to break compatibility that they have all these apps. They courted all these developers to put custom Samsung multi-window stuff in there as well. So that's going to get a little messy.
What about... Mike, as we get these new versions of the OS, how quickly do we worry about targeting them? Because, I mean, for us it's a little different because we have a lot of hardcore, you know, Android fans who are going to be using Marshmallow. But when you're talking about there only being, you know, 10, 15, 20% of people on that target for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 months, is it that big a deal to get to it quickly? Or just, you know, should developers maybe take their time? Or does it really just depend on what you're using?
Well, I mean, just like Jerry was mentioning a few minutes ago, you know, you'd never want to cause problems. We wanted to kind of tread lightly. The new API Marshmallow is a big jump. That enables this whole permissions thing, which, you've certainly been addressing offline.
Okay, no. So that's actually a really good question. I was going to bring that up. Was what permissions do you think we're going to have to present at runtime? I mean, I can think of a couple.
I looked already, yeah. Actually. So, I mean, just to be clear, if you have a Marshmallow phone, our app already, the permissions can be revoked, which is a real hardship for developers because it means that for sure my app, you know, our app could be broken right now if I don't fix it. But anyway, it's just a USB... I think it was just USB access, which it should be pretty easy. I think that's an isolated use case.
Let's look. Yep, storage. That's the only one.
Yeah, right. So I can't imagine that's used in very many places, probably just on that wallpaper.
I think it was probably just for the wallpaper. Maybe for podcast download? But yeah, so if you deny the permission, you probably can't see it. It says, this app was designed for an older version of Android. Denying permission may cause it to no longer function as needed. Let's see what happens. Let's try to break it live.
I'm dialing 911.
Yeah, I mean, and I've been experiencing a few that don't necessarily fail as gracefully as you would like. So,
in answer to your question, the first thing I'm doing for the next phase is upgrading everything to target Marshmallow and the new Play Services APIs. So that's going to be, I mean, those are kind of under the cover things that who knows what'll break or. But
yep, I crashed it on the podcast trying to download the podcast.
Awesome.
Cool. So, which makes sense, yeah.
And that's great. Now I know where to fix it. So that saves me a step.
Yeah, the wallpaper gallery has other issues. So. Yeah, I mean, and look, there are things we know that are kind of broken here. Some of them are a little small, and we can probably fix in a little point release. Some are larger things. They're going to have to wait for this next phase. That's the real hard thing for me is like wanting everything fixed right this second, knowing that, A, there are only so many hours in the day, and B, I'm not doing a damn thing to help you. So. It's been fun from a managerial standpoint, I guess.
But when you do everything all at once, you end up with a LG Lollipop update in Poland that is horrible, but it's everything you ever asked for thrown at you. So I am really glad we resisted the temptation. And I think a lot of that is Mike, because I think Phil would have just put the kitchen sink in there.
To be clear, this is not my first rodeo, and that's to protect myself from, support calls.
I've been driving Mike a little nuts because he's like, how do you want to do this? I'm like, I don't know. Do whatever you think's right.
Hey, that's the right answer.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want me getting in the way.
But, the interesting thing is, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, is there weren't too many decisions that I needed to make. Like, as a GDE, I'm trying to stay true to the material design spec. And now that that spec exists, it was a place for me really to reference the right way to do things. For instance, cards, the use of cards. We had cards everywhere in the old UI. And I didn't really know where they're supposed to be or where they're not. And it turns out the material design spec says to basically remove them everywhere. And it made a huge dramatic difference. Mm-hmm. It gave everything just a lot more room kind of to, so you can read it and kind of just more room to breathe, I think.
Victor wants to know, what developing platform did you use for the app?
Android Studio. Yeah.
Eclipse is dead.
Yeah, more or less. And unfortunately, I wrote a book about Android Eclipse.
Well, so there's a fair question, right? How much of what you just did do you think will be undone, in a year, design-wise?
Well, the nice thing is, since we're now using this compat layer, mm-hmm. it should be able to be revised with, updates in that. In fact, they just released a brand new version today of the app compat. It's now 23.1. So, and the cool thing about app compat is it's independent of the actual Android open source, or it's not Play Services, but it's independent of the Android core. So it could be released as part of developers' code, and it doesn't rely on vendor or OS support to do any of these changes. So they'll update the code; it'll go up to GitHub. We'll suck it down, and.
I tell you what else was interesting to me was that the size of the app didn't really change. In fact, I think it got smaller a little bit.
Well, the important thing is we removed two of the three third-party libraries we were using. And we'll remove the third in the next phase. So,
why is that important? Why is that a good thing?
Well, because third-party libraries don't get updated, or they're not as tested as vigorously as the Google stuff. So, and also they don't look the same, right? Pull to refresh. We removed a third-party library which looked much different, and we replaced it with the standard circly spinner thing.
Which, by the way, if you haven't noticed the colors in that as it's spinning around, and hopefully you don't see it too often, but note that thing is colored and has gradients and really cool. And that was pretty neat. I'm easily amused by colors and spinny things, though.
Me too. I like that. You and me both.
Well, cool. Anything else from this first phase you think you want to pass on to everybody? And again, we've got a lot more coming, right? We've got, you know, we have things we need to fix. We have features we want to get in there, and we've got plenty of time to do it. So.
Yep. No, I would just say awesome having the beta channel to test it and give feedback early. That's super useful.
It's like 6,200 people now. It's a little out of control.
They found a lot of bugs that would have been difficult, you know, to find otherwise. And I really love having, you know, things fixed before they go out to the real world. So
I started the beta. And I started replying to reviews again on Google Play. And it had been a little while since I'd done that. I kind of just totally forgot about it. And the Google Play Developer Console is just can't say enough about it. It really is that good and so easy to use that that actually lets me contribute a little bit to this process, which is nice. But I mean, it's just so easy to follow and reply to reviews. And if somebody has a problem, you know, start helping them there so they don't feel like they're just shouting into the wind. It's very cool.
And of course, the beta facilities, right? Being able to send out early betas through that channel, it's really powerful.
Let's see. John has some bugs. Well, yes, John, we know. What is Simeon?
I'm going snowboarding, so good luck with that.
That's the right thing. Mike's like, hurry up and get this out. Is it on a Friday? Okay. Neglected to mention he was going to the mountain. That's the right thing to do. Well, thanks for taking some time with us, and we'll probably do a blog post or two kind of detailing your experience as well. I mean, this has been really educational for me. I don't know about you, Jerry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's... Mobile and traditional development are growing together and growing apart at the same time. Mike knows what I mean. That may sound weird, but that's really how things are happening. And it's always great to talk to somebody who's an expert on the mobile side.
All right, one more from the Q&A because it's the question everybody always asks. Mike, what is your opinion of the benefit of a native app versus web apps?
I think native apps generally... are better, right? Because they're just more performant. And the nice thing about our native app is it does a lot of background updates and, you know, can work offline. And those things are much harder to do, obviously, with a web app, you know.
Good answer. I don't think anyone's going to pick up a pitchfork over that. Well, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. And we'll definitely have you back anytime you want.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great. It's been a super fun experience. And I think that we just kind of shined up the app, but I really think it makes a dramatic difference. I mean, maybe I can see it because it kind of I'm inside, but just the material elements, kind of giving everything more room, getting things aligned, and using some of these navigation standards are really like kind of bring it all together. So I think it made a big difference. I'm excited about it.
Got a lot more to come. Cool. Well, enjoy the mountain, and we'll see you when you get back.
Thanks for the great work, Mike.
Yeah, thanks
for having me again, guys. Yep.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break from that, and when we come back, we got a whole lot more going on. We got a whole bunch of voicemails. We got more questions in the Q&A, and we'll see if there's anything else these guys want to talk about. So hang on. We'll be right back. Okay, so maybe it's not news that supported open source is now widely accepted at the highest levels of enterprise computing, but the extent of adoption is probably broader than you think, and most of the open source running in elite data centers is Red Hat. And it's more than just Red Hat Enterprise Linux, too. Red Hat offers storage solutions, cloud computing, and everything you need for application development. It's all open source and all enterprise grade. And the stats are eye-opening. Red Hat runs in every executive department in the U.S. federal government, every airline, telecom giant, and healthcare company in the Fortune Global 500, the New York Stock Exchange, and every commercial bank in the Fortune 500. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 use Red Hat for everything from the critical to the routine. The only thing that's really surprising is how many people, and these are people who know a lot about technology, don't know this. It's almost as if Red Hat snuck in, got comfortable, and quietly transformed the technology business without making a fuss. Sometimes the most disruptive technology is the stuff that no one notices at first. To find out more about how Red Hat is quietly redefining enterprise technology, visit redhat.com. Red Hat. Build on it, run with it, count on it. All right, that was good. You excited? I'm excited.
Yeah.
I love having this out the door.
It's really neat because, man, the four of us here, we've put up with some really bad versions of that app in the past years or so, and what, you know, especially the, was that a production release you just pushed out or another beta?
Today?
Yesterday?
Yeah, no, that's, it's live for everybody now.
Okay, well, so, I mean, seeing that is great, to just how far it's come. And I tell you what, dude, you, that Mike is a score, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know how you met him, but more people like him. And
sat next to him at All About Android. I think I invited myself on that show, actually. yeah, by the way, I should probably mention where you can go get the app. It's in Google Play. Just, you know, search for Android Central. You can also go to, we have that phone shortener, which is really cool, phon.es /AC app. Or if you go to /apps, that will show you all of the Mobile Nations app. Google Play has these really cool developer pages now where you can promote like all of the developers' apps in one place. So it's not just the AC app, it's, you know, the Crackberry apps. It's all our Android apps have been updated. So very, very cool. And you know, it's awesome working with Mike. Really fun guy. So, what do you guys want to do? You want to do the voicemails? You want to save those for last? Or you want to talk more marshmallow stuff or anything else that's been going on?
Do the voicemails first, yeah. So we don't have to try to squeeze them at the end.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, and they're really good questions, and I think some of it's going to lead us into more discussion. So, let's do that. How about we start with... How about we cross our fingers and see if I get it right?
Well, I do that every time.
I know, right?
Slice a chicken.
All right, let's start with Anthony. This is... It's the longest one of the bunch, so let's see how it goes. That went pretty poorly, huh? You know what I should do? I should hit play.
Hello, Android Central team. This is Anthony from Columbus, Ohio, just calling in for a recommendation for an Android Wear smartwatch. I've definitely been paying attention as they've been coming down the pipe, but there's so many now, I'm not sure which one's best for me. The biggest feature I'm looking for is a watch that does not need to be tethered to my phone in order to go for a walk or a run and still listen to music and podcasts. Is there a watch out there that does that? And if so, does that watch do GPS data as well so that I can come home and, you know, sync it, the health stats or GPS with my phone at home? And then on top of that, does the watch also not include, or does it not need a cellular plan? I think it's pretty ridiculous that I would need a separate cell phone plan. So does any watch out there do that kind of thing where I don't have to have my phone with me? And if so, is there an older generation as well? Instead of having to spend, you know, let's say $300 or $400, I can spend maybe $200 or less. I appreciate any advice, and thank you guys for all you do.
So hang on, you want a phone that does more but costs less?
This man wants a Samsung Gear X.
I want to make sure that I understand everything that was just said. He wants a watch that acts like a phone, meaning that it's not tethered to his phone but still accesses stuff when it's not tethered to his phone.
Yes.
But doesn't have a separate data plan.
Well, no, I think he wants the watch to be able to do things without an internet connection. So... like he said, offline music playback, offline podcast playback, step tracking, GPS. But then, like, he doesn't need that. He doesn't need, like, notifications and stuff. He just wants to be able to go on a walk or something.
Oh, I got you.
Come okay. back and have it gracefully,
super
just
confused.
Gracefully just pick back up to the phone.
Well, so, and that's what, you know, the Sony one did.
And yeah, it did that's it fairly what well. Android Wear in general do. The only problem is making the right choice of apps to have an app that does offline.
That's been my thing. So I'm wearing the Moto 360 right now, and we'll talk some more about it in a minute. By the way, I love that texture on the bezel you can get with it. Very cool. So I went running yesterday and I left my phone in the car, and I guess it tracked my steps, but that hasn't synced back up to Google Fit yet.
See, that's what I was worried about. I know that it'll always just track your steps. It's just how well it syncs back up afterward. And, you know, more on the media point is Google Play Music will do offline playback, but it's still a little clunky to get the music transferred over there, and it takes a while. But I don't know of any podcast apps that have enabled offline on-watch listening.
That's a good question.
There's a trick for that. You download your podcast into a folder that automatically is uploaded to Google Music as an MP3.
Right.
And then in Google Play Music, you've got a 45-minute MP3 that
right.
it says is a song, but it's really your podcast.
So that's you know, that'll work. It's still just, you know, right. It's a little clunky. The whole idea of this whole thing is a little on the clunky side. I mean, the problem is even the 3G enabled watches don't really change that. You know, they're still limited storage devices that aren't very happy to load up podcast and music.
But I think was that Steven? Am I getting his name
yes.
right? Or okay, I think Steven really nails a use case that a lot of people want, and none of these devices from
Anthony
or anybody
sorry,
else. Anthony. They don't nail it yet. You want a watch? You can stick a SIM card in and do whatever it can do. Samsung has you covered. You want a watch that does nothing and is pretty good on battery life, but it needs to connect to your phone? A lot of Android Wear watches have you covered. Sony tried to hit that middle ground with a degree of success, but nobody has swooped in and really, okay, here's a smartwatch. It's got a decent enough processor to do things offline. Here's 8 gigabytes of storage so you can store stuff. And when you get back, here are apps you can put on your phone to make sure it syncs everything right when you need to, and it'll act like you had your phone all along.
Now, the Gear S2 is pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Gear S2 is kind of tied in its own ecosystem, and you may not have the apps you want
to
use.
But that's also kind of the way to, like, I mean, if you want to guarantee that stuff works, that's the way you go about it.
Right. You would want a system like the Gear S2. The only problem is it probably doesn't have the apps you want to use. And if you do, then you have this issue. When you come back home, you still want the watch to be able to link back up to the phone and have that two-way sync again.
Right.
That's just not really the case on the Gear S2 either.
The Moto 360 Sport will most likely be the closest thing to what this guy is looking for when
Could
it
be.
Comes out.
Yeah.
It has the GPS loaded in. Motorola has done an amazing job with onboard software that kind of adds to the experience. And one of the big things that they talked about during the presentation for the original Moto 360 second gen was the Sport version having stuff to do exactly the kind of things that he's looking at. But they didn't have any, you know, actual demo versions when I was there, so I haven't actually seen any of it yet. That's the one that I'm looking for to be kind of the watch that does the things that he's looking for.
Well, and another one to look out for, and it's going to be just a few weeks, I think, is the LG Watchurbane Second Edition LTE. That's the full name,
well,
by the
I
way.
Mean, just depends if they end up actually doing that kind of software stuff that Russell's referring to, or if done what Samsung has done on a couple where you just add 3G to it.
And there could be 16.
But the software is the exact same.
No. It's going to be a new version of Android on it. What's going to be new, I don't know. I haven't actually seen it. They wouldn't let us see it. It's pretty obvious it's some version that's not out yet. LG's health app, what's it called? LG Health, I guess, is very prominent in it. So I think it's going to be an interesting option. Even if it's not perfect. Good question, though. We didn't really answer.
Unfortunately, didn't quite have the answer for you. If the device doesn't exist.
Yeah, the answer is not yet. And unfortunately, it's not going to be as cheap as you may like when it happens.
I completely understand him not wanting to have a separate plan for his watch.
Sure.
Like these things should be capable enough to do some basic offline stuff and then gracefully come back online when you get back home. And phone, you know, and sync back to your phone.
And the first carrier that gives you 3 SIM cards, one for your tablet, one for your phone, and one for your watch, that all have the same number and are all in the same exact data plan,
is AT&T.
The others started announcing those this week too.
I mean, Samsung, Samsung solved this problem with the Gear S already. I mean, they just do call forwarding. It doesn't matter what the SIM card number is on your watch. It's just, it's all tied to a plan. The problem is now you're having to manage another SIM. You pay $10 to add it to your plan. You might accidentally have your watch to start, you know, now you've lost 750 megabytes because, you know, your watch decided to start pulling down or streaming music or something and you didn't know about it. So there's a management issue to figure out there.
Hopefully we'll have a better answer here in a few weeks. All right, let's do, I believe he said Donald or Ronald. Let me see. I can't read my writing.
Hey, guys, this is Dom from Oklahoma.
Donald.
Hey, guys, this is Dom from Oklahoma City. Absolutely love the show. I have a what would you do question. My birthday is next month. I'm struggling between either getting the Nexus 6P or a new smartwatch. So I have the Nexus 6 right now running Marshmallow. Love it. And if I go to the Nexus 6P, I'm not going to gain any software enhancements. Really, I'll just gain a fingerprint sensor and probably a better camera. I have the first-gen Moto 360, and as you guys know, the last couple of updates, the performance has taken a nosedive, so I'm really thinking about upgrading to the second-gen or the Huawei watch. So which one would you do, the smartwatch or the phone? And if you say smartwatch, I'm torn between the second-gen Moto 360 or the Huawei watch. I'm not real sure if the Huawei watch has an ambient light sensor. If it doesn't, then I probably won't get it. All right, thanks, guys. Love the show. Let me know what you think.
I think phones are going to last you a lot longer at this point, right?
Phones are going to last you a whole lot longer.
Keep your Nexus 6.
And especially if you're happy with the size of the Nexus 6 already, he nailed it. You're already getting the software. It's plenty capable in terms of hardware. I just don't think that's worth the upgrade as much.
Yep.
Now, about the watch, I'll be upfront. I don't much care for Android Wear. I think it tries to do too much. It's unsuccessful at a lot of it, and I am just the kind of guy that likes the simplicity of a Pebble. Pebble works better for me, but man, this Huawei watch, it's so pretty. This is what I'm using. No ambient light sensor, none whatsoever, but this looks like something you would buy at the jewelry counter versus something you buy at Best Buy.
Russell and I haven't really gotten into it since I got the Moto 360 last week, actually, and I've been wearing it for a week now, and I like it a lot. But I think Russell's wrong.
Well, no, I'm not.
I'm okay without the ambient light sensor. I get that it's a thing for a lot of people, but every time I go out into the sunshine with this thing, I can't see it. Like, it takes a minute to catch up. I think the leather on the Huawei watch is nicer. I don't know if you can see them here, but I'm getting these little wrinkles in here. Is that from water, maybe?
No, it's how crappy good leather
wears, man. Yeah. No, if it's like the last 360 band, that's how good leather wears.
Mm. I can't stand the bands that Motorola includes with these watches. The one at Huawei, I appreciated a lot better.
Phil's right. Russell is just wrong.
Dude, the band looks like two pieces of leather glued together.
Yeah, it does.
It's not good.
Huawei's leathers.
The two pieces may be good leather, but the way that they assembled it is just bad.
But like I said, I love this texture I got on the bezel. That was
old wheel.
Yeah,
they called it.
Is that what it was? Yeah, you know, one of the Moto Maker options. The display is fine. The performance is fine. You know, the little button I never use is fine. I still don't ever take my heart rate on it. I haven't tried popping the straps off, but let's see.
It's fine.
Yep, that's fine.
As the Huawei one.
Yeah.
If you like the original Moto 360, if an ambient light sensor is a thing that you feel like you need, the current Moto 360 is still the best watch for you. However, the best Android Wear watch that actually looks and feels like a watch on your wrist is the Huawei watch. It just is.
Like I said, Russell is completely right.
I mean, that's what I've been saying this whole time. I prefer the, like Jerry said, I prefer the watch on my wrist that feels like it came from Best Buy. It feels like a gadget on my wrist, whereas the Huawei watch feels like a piece of jewelry.
Yep.
That's your answer. I also agree. Keep your Nexus 6. I tell you, if you want to get a watch, I mean, get the ZenWatch 2 for $150.
The watch is a far more personal question.
Yeah.
About what kind of style you like.
ZenWatch 2, $150. You get the Android Wear experience without spending a whole lot of money.
Stop gluing leather together.
It just, the Zen Watch just looks like you just ran over it or something. So it gets super long.
No, listen, it's your birthday, dude, by the Huawei watch. Just do it.
All right, that's a good question, Donald. Here comes Justin.
Hey, Android Central. This is Justin from Michigan. Love the podcast. Looking for your opinions on the new Moto X Pure and the Nexus devices. And I understand the iPhones as well, being cross-carrier devices, working on all the major carriers in the U.S. Do you think this is a trend which will first continue and second possibly expand to include Samsung, HTC, or LG even? Interested in your thoughts on if this is a good move and if we'll see more of it from more manufacturers. Thanks.
It's a good question.
Yes, it's awesome. My favorite thing in the whole wide world. I have lived for 2 or 3 years as a Verizon user, every time a nice phone comes out, I have to hold my breath for hope that there's going to be a not crappy Verizon version. And the Moto X Pure Edition showed up on my doorstep. I just popped the SIM in there and it just started working. It was so nice.
And even, I mean, within our jobs, like, it's always a little tough switching. I mean, depending on the phone, switching to a Verizon phone. It's like, all right, I got to go to the store or something or deal with whatever.
But I don't think you're ever going to see it from Samsung. Well, not ever, but anytime soon from Samsung or LG, because they're having success building phones for carriers.
Motorola, yeah, I mean, not. There's the technical level where, yes, they can build these phones with like 25 bands in them and they can support everything. Then there's the political level where they, like Jerry said, they don't want to sell or won't sell unlocked because they're having good success selling carrier branded versions and the carriers like that. And at the same time, not all unlocked phones will work on Verizon, even if they support the bands. You still have to have Verizon support at some level where they allow it to be on their network. Now, that's obviously a political thing, not a technical thing, but there's always going to be that other layer that's going to cause issues. But I'm glad that more manufacturers are just keeping all the bands in there. And that means, especially if you look into import and things like that, you don't have as many SKU problems where you buy the wrong one or you have missing half the bands to run on AT&T or something.
It's 2015. It drives me nuts hearing there's going to be a Verizon version or a Sprint version. I mean, no.
Right.
This should not be the case at all anymore.
The big thing for me is it's cool. Hey, AT&T, you can have your version, but I also just want the unlocked one available that also supports AT&T. And, you know, give those people that choice. They want to finance it, whatever. But, you know, let me also buy unlocked.
From the technical side, and if Alex was here, he'd know off the top of his head. I believe Sony built a phone that would run everywhere except for the CDMA networks in Russia, but everywhere else in the world on one device.
That's the way it should be.
You put like the LTE bands in it, yeah.
Good question. All right, here's another long one. This one comes from... This is from Mike.
Hey, guys. This is Mike from Virginia. I'm a longtime listener, but I just bought my wife the iPhone 6S. Her first smartphone was the Moto X 2013, and while she loved its size and features, she hated the battery and its crappy camera. So when she became eligible for an upgrade, she wanted three things. Full-day battery.
Yes.
A great camera.
Yes.
And something she could wield with one hand while holding our daughter in the other. And for a size reference, she thinks my Droid Turbo is just too big. So, after considering all the latest and greatest Android flagships on Verizon, none of them fully met her three must-haves. So, I conceded and we went with the 6S. And after about 2 weeks, she's been loving the camera, and the standby time on this thing is phenomenal. That said, she misses having a back button, hates Siri, and misses Moto Voice. So, while it's too late for her, where did I go wrong? Is there an Android phone out there that would have met her needs that I didn't think of? I have to believe that there are people in a similar predicament, so what would your recommendation be for them? Thanks, guys.
Until you said Verizon, Sony has you covered with their compacts.
That's true.
But this goes back to the last question. Either Verizon doesn't want them, or Sony doesn't feel like building them special for them because you can't get them. But they cover it all.
And I completely understand the desire to eventually just go to that iPhone 6 or 6S. Like, it's still a great size. And, you know, I carry my iPhone 6 sometimes as well. The size is really, really nice. But, yeah, like you said, until you went to Verizon, there was, even then, there's still pretty limited issue, limited number of options there. I mean, you have the Nexus 5X. That's the only somewhat decent-sized phone nowadays, right? Galaxy S6.
Yeah,
the S6 fits everything but the battery.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's...
Because we kind of... That's the problem. The battery kind of made us forget about that. I remember when I got the Note 5, I was like, wow, I really like this design. I wish it was smaller. Oh, wait, I just used that phone for 3 months. It was called the Galaxy S6. The only problem is, you know, if it doesn't make it through a day, then kind of the rest of it's not as worth it, as he pointed out.
My wife adjusted to the size of the 6S pretty well, up from a 5S or 5.
The 6S size is really good.
Yeah. Good question. The other answer is do whatever she says.
Right. Dude, if your wife, I mean, she hates Siri and misses the back button, she still probably made the best choice for her, and, you know, be encourage her, help her. There's nothing wrong with an iPhone.
All right, one more. This one comes from Steven.
Hi, guys. This is Steven Fernandez in Puerto Rico. This is some quick feedback about your last podcast and about the fingerprint reader and Jerry's concern about not wanting to use it because potentially somebody could get at the data and then they would have your fingerprint forever. Jerry, I guess this question is more for you. It was my understanding that that data was stored in a secure store, at least on iOS devices. And I'm not really sure, how does Android implement there? How do the APIs, I assume, force it to be? Is the data out there sitting somewhere where you could get at it, or is it in a secure store where you can only get at it with a yes-no type question? And beyond that, I really still don't understand your concern, because even if somebody were to get at it, or they were to get at the hash of your fingerprint, that doesn't mean they have access to your data other than on that device, I guess, without you unlocking it or something like that, because they're still going to need to have your password to get at your Google data. So I'd love to hear your thoughts elaborated a little bit more on this subject. Thanks, guys. I love the podcast. Bye.
Okay,
go for it.
We are not 100% sure, you know, about any of the software on the new Nexus phones just yet, but I'm sure it'll be salted, hashed, encrypted, protected just as well or possibly better than it is on iOS. That's not my concern. My concern is nothing is ever secure. Nothing is secure. You get enough people that are dedicated and determined to find a way to get in, they will get in. And once you have my fingerprint, maybe you can't get into my phone or another phone without a Google password, but you have my fingerprint. I can never change that. My phone can, or any other device, computer, my front door. I can't change my fingerprint like I can change my 16-digit password. And I'm not alone in that regard. There's a lot of people that feel that way. I don't know. I'm not trying to say that it won't be secure, but if somebody is determined enough to find a way to get that token and decrypt a way to use that token, you're stuck. You can never change it. They've got you for the rest of your life unless you can find a way to alter your fingerprint.
That is not even where I thought you were going to go with that. There's a legal precedent where police officers can encourage you to use your fingerprint to unlock your phone, right, even though, but they can't ask you to enter in your password.
Which is and crazy.
That's another concern. I try not to get too political. I'm not one of those people that says I have nothing to hide because, oh my God. But I would go to jail for any undetermined amount of time before I would help any law enforcement officer get in my phone. And if I had a fingerprint sensor, that's what would happen.
Hey, by the way, here's how you deal with that. You just push the little lock icon on your screen so that you have to put in. Remember, because even with a fingerprint, there has to be a backup password or PIN.
Yeah.
So your fingerprint is not the only method of verification on there. Like, they won't allow it to be.
But my reason for not thinking a fingerprint or really any biometrics is the best type of security is because when it gets compromised, not if, one day somebody will release a hack that, you know, affects Android phones from 16 years ago, but your phone's never been updated. I can see the headlines now. But when it gets compromised, you can't change it. You're stuck with it.
By the way, I mean, how screwed up is it that we're all basically okay with our credit cards getting stolen every now and then? But now that we use fingerprints, which are supposed to be, you know, all secure stuff.
Well, it's because it's where the liability lands.
Right.
After
because
what I went.
Just exactly as Jerry is saying, you can't change your fingerprint, but you can change your credit card number.
After what I went through with Target last year, I'm not okay with my credit card getting stolen. If it happens again, I'm going to jail for what I do. That was just horrible. But Andrew nails it. I mean, if that happens, Chase is the one that has to worry about it, not Jerry.
Good question. I mean, and we'll have more answers for that.
Oh, and feel free, right? You know, feel free to, you know, think I'm just a tinfoil hat idiot because I am a lot of times in a lot of ways, but that's where I'm allowed to be. I do it for you. I look out for everybody.
All right, let's take one more break, and when we come back, we'll do some more of the Q&A and anything else we got laying around. So much for not going an hour and a half, huh?
Told you.
All right, hang on. We'll be right back. All right, we'd like to thank Casper Mattresses for sponsoring this show. They are obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/AC and using code AC. Listen, you spend about a third of your life sleeping, and some of us maybe a little more. Let's make sure you're doing it on a good mattress. Casper brings together two comfy technologies for better nights and better days. Latex foam and memory foam. So they've got just the right sink, just the right bounce, no matter how you sleep. You will be completely surprised at how good these feel. And they've got a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you. You can try it for 100 days, and if you're not happy, they'll pick it back up. Comes in a big box, and it's actually a lot of fun to take out. I really can't stress that enough. If you've had kids, they're going to have a blast with this thing. At the store, maybe you'll get a minute to try the mattresses, but with Casper, you actually get to sleep on it. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Compare that to industry averages, and it's an outstanding price point. So get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/AC and use code AC. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm not crazy, right?
No.
Okay, I was wanting somebody to answer you, idiots.
You're kind of crazy. You are kind of crazy.
But okay, but
no, like from a theoretical standpoint, I get you.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying it's practical.
No. And that's the difference, I think. It's do I like the idea of somebody getting into my stuff? No. Is it and again, like bring up the stone, you know, the Snowden stuff. I'm so back and forth on that. It's complicated. I don't fall on one side or the other, and it's very much the same way with the security stuff. I mean, there's stuff that I want to work easily, and there's stuff I want, you know, to not work easily so that it's absolutely secure. I use two-step for some things and not for others.
And I'm also perfectly aware that nobody wants any of my data for any particular reason. If I would get affected, it's just as a, you know, an extra because they were trying to do it for somebody important. I mean, I'm 100 air. You can go ahead and have all my stuff.
Well, and I'm still of the mind that if somebody wants to get your stuff that badly, they will. It won't just be one avenue that they, you know, somebody, they don't just try to get your password one way and say, oh, nope, I couldn't do it. That's it.
Dude, every Android phone is vulnerable to all these hacks.
Oh, my God. I saw that this week. Was it something like 87% or wasn't insecure? What was the, did they use vulnerable?
They use the word vulnerability, but they
pretty sweet graph.
They failed to mention that all of the ones that particular phones are affected by require ADB debugging turned on, an unlocked bootloader, and a cable connected to a computer. And if you're doing that, you don't care about security.
So you're telling me if I park my car with the doors unlocked in a bad part of town and leave it there for a week, it's going to get stolen?
My favorite part of that was the usual Apple suspects laughing in that, and then the next day everyone's like, ooh, jailbreak's out. Well, what do you think you're talking about? Jailbreaking root exploits? I mean, it's... whatever. Just stop it if you don't know what you're talking about. All right, Q&A. Let's start at the top. Does Andrew have to wear a coat inside his house because Phil doesn't pay him enough to have heat? Is it that cold up there yet?
No, it's not. It's not that cold.
It's freezing here in the office right now.
My apartment's well insulated. I just like this really fuzzy coat.
You clicked that away before I could read who said it. Whoever said that, you are the meanest, Heaven. Most hilarious person I've ever seen on the internet. That was funny.
I actually have not turned on heat in my apartment since we moved here, so.
I thought you put on a coat. A Unabomber.
Do you even have air conditioning in that apartment?
Yeah, we do, okay. Which we needed over the summer. But you don't really need. I mean, it'll get cold for like 3 weeks, and then we'll be fine. And I have my fuzzy hoodie, so, you know, I don't even care.
Doug wants to know, with all the Hangouts updates, do you see Google Messenger going away?
No, I mean...
No, you need to have, not need, but you want to have a stock SMS-only app available.
You need something that's open source.
Also, there's been a ton of updates to Messenger, especially in Android 6.0. Messenger is currently the only thing in 6.0 that supports the direct contact sharing feature in 6.0. So definitely not going away anytime soon.
And if for as many people as use Hangouts, you know, semi-regularly, people use SMS still, and they use the SMS app that is preloaded on their phone, and Google Messenger is a good SMS client if you don't need all this extra Hangout stuff.
And here's a weird little tip from someone who did this for a really long time. This applies doubly to email, but especially to SMS. You're not going to get fancy updates to SMS apps every couple of weeks, like you will with chat apps that also do SMS, because the people who use regular text messaging apps, they don't ever want them to change. They need to work exactly the same way every single time, no bugs, no nothing, because everyone uses these SMS apps and they follow a very serious and regulated set of protocols that have to be pretty heavily obeyed. So, you know, you're not going to get, you know, the Snapchat, you know, kind of updates to a Messenger app. It's just never going to happen.
Things aren't going to just randomly break.
Imagine that a Messenger app also has to be rigorously tested, because in many locales you can text 911.
Right.
That thing has to work every time.
So it's part of it. It's a part of the industry that does not change because it can't. Or rather, it really shouldn't.
You know what? Can you imagine depending on Hangouts to send a 911 text?
Oh.
That would not be good.
Your message has been queued. It might get there eventually, tomorrow.
Sending, sending, sending.
Let's see. Cars and Tech, I forget your name. Do you believe we will soon receive multi-window support among other features for large screen phones? Seems like a feature many people want. I think eventually. I don't know about soon.
I think Google's going to worry more about the tablet layout. Yes, it's all the same Android
tablet.
But the tablet, you know, it defines itself as a tablet, gets a slightly different layout, and it'd be a huge benefit.
I'm trying to decide if I'm excited for the Pixel C. I think I am.
I'd be extra excited if it meant that there were going to be these extra rollouts of multi-window stuff. Yeah. And, you know, Android already does pretty well with keyboards, but a multi-window stuff on a 10-inch screen would be great.
I'm super excited to hear about the rest of the Pixel C, because I'm sure we didn't hear everything about it yet.
Nope.
Yeah,
positive.
Kevin points out that Jerry can use a different finger for fingerprints until they capture all 10 of them. But you can't if it's on the back. You can, I mean, really, the index finger is the only one that's maybe your middle finger.
Yeah, you're not going to put your thumb on the back of the Nexus 5X.
Yeah, you just can't. It's not. I've used the new Nexuses very briefly, and they're just like the Huawei Mate S has it back there. It's just like. It's like trying to use your pinky on an LG phone. It just won't work.
But or use any finger on an LG phone. Probably solid for nipple unlock, which Jerry should be all over.
That's true.
We're not stopping there.
GRBMC wants to know if these phones are going to replace DSLRs. No.
You still can't break physics.
They might replace it for you, which is perfectly fine.
It for a lot of people. Yeah. And those... It replaced it for the people who should not have been carrying around a 3.5-pound DSLR in the first place, a.k.a. any tourist area of any city, most of those people. They didn't need to be carrying around this gigantic camera. They didn't know how to use or what to do with the pictures with in the first place, and that's a big thing. But for people who know they need a DSLR or a mirrorless interchangeable lens camera, it can't get there.
I don't think mirrorless has killed it. I mean, I'm getting better with it, but it's still very different than what my Nikon looked and felt like.
And
mirrorless is up there.
Was that Russell?
Every time you see one of those articles about someone who used their phone to take professional photos of something like a sporting event or a mountain range or something like that, as soon as that what is almost assuredly paid thing is done, they go right back to their big boy camera.
Yeah.
So
also, they're a professional photographer.
Right? It looks like a professionally composed smartphone picture.
Now, the flip side of that is I have this year been able to use my phone to take pictures for Android Central with less yelling from Phil, a lot more than in previous years. So, we're technically professional photographers because Phil pays us money for pictures we take. That doesn't mean we're pros and know what's going on, but I can take even a Nexus 6 and take a picture good enough that nobody, including Phil, will complain about.
Hmm.
Yes.
And I'm not going to tell you.
The minimum quality of photos you can get out of a phone obviously is stepping up big time. But to compare it to something that, like I said, you can't overcome the physics required to have a much larger sensor and larger lens. Yeah. There's just, of course, there are downsides to having a huge camera, as I pointed out. But, you know, raw quality, you can't get there.
And bottom line, if I didn't need to take pictures for my job, the LG G4 is enough camera for anything I would ever need. I used it on my vacation, never even pulled my camera out, did everything I needed it to do.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking pictures for magazines or, you know, anything like that with it.
Good question here from Victor. Does Android Pay need a fingerprint? If not, what is the fastest and most secure option for locking an Android device?
It only needs a PIN pattern password or fingerprint. It accepts all four of those as equal citizens of unlocking on your phone.
As it should.
Yeah, so smart, you know, if you use, you know, face unlock will not work. If you have on-body detection or smart lock from your watch connected, it's likely to challenge you for that password. You have to have a backup password and use smart lock anyway. So fingerprint not required. Fingerprint is not even required for Samsung Pay because they understand that, you know, fingerprint readers don't work as well for everybody's fingers. And you can choose to use a PIN on Samsung Pay as well if you don't want to use a fingerprint scanner. And there's a usability issue there, you know. You know, maybe your fingerprints just have been worn off, you're worn down, or, you know, you had a burn or something. Like, they can't require a fingerprint.
Or you're some crazy guy who doesn't want to use his fingerprint.
Because if you're some crazy guy, you know, whatever. Probably using cash anyway.
I'll also pay money to anybody who takes Jerry's face and splices it onto that GIF of the scene from Men. No, from Men in Black, where he's got his fingers on the silver orb, getting his fingerprint burned off.
Exactly. And
$10 to whoever does that.
Thanks, Russell.
Jamie wants to know if we could build one Android app with all the Mobile Nation sites in it. Yeah, I mean, we could. Will we? I don't know.
That would get pretty overwhelming, I think.
Maybe.
But now your storage on your phone is a lot more, and our apps are a lot more lightweight. You know, don't balk at the idea of installing iMore, Windows Central, and Android Central, let's say, if those are the three you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, I know exactly how I do it, too. But I think I like the idea of separate apps for a number of reasons. One is, we've already got the established app, and actually, let me look. You I wonder which site.
And my peanut butter.
Which site do you guys think has the second most? I mean, obviously, AC is the biggest of our Android
Windows
apps.
Windows Central.
Let's see.
I'm going to say iMore.
App installs.
Yeah, it is Windows. No, it is Windows Central.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it has almost twice as many as iMore. iMore and CrackBerry are about the same.
I would have thought that a lot of Android users have an iPad, and they would.
Yeah. CrackBerry and iMore are just about the same. Windows Central is about twice as many.
We're going to see that go up when the Priv launches.
Maybe, yeah. We're still getting closer.
Semi-joking, maybe?
All right, I'm going to scroll down.
By BlackBerry, you mean.
Let me scroll down to the bottom and see what we got.
Ronnie has a question about our thoughts on the future of Google Voice. I've considered porting my mobile number, but concerned with Fi that it will be shortly killed. I don't think there's a short kill in for many of the same reasons as Russell was talking about with SMS apps. They can't, you know, just announce like next Thursday they're killing it and you have 1 week to get your number out.
It would be like a 6 month or 1 year sunset at least.
I would say, yeah, a year sounds about right if they're going to sunset it. Now, that's not, I mean, the fact that they're working, you know, on a very similar system with Project Fi kind of means that there are legs in the idea of this, you know, headless number forwarding to all kinds of other phones thing. It may just not be called Google Voice
for very long. I don't see Google abandoning the how do I say this without getting everybody all up in arms, the user data they collect by offering you a free phone number. You've got a free phone number you can use on your tablet. I'm not saying a lot of people use it, but the people that do use it are providing nice analytical data to Google that's probably too valuable to just throw away.
And also remember the fact that if anybody on Android or iOS who downloads Hangouts and makes a Hangouts VoIP call is also using a Google Voice number as well. It's all the same system. This super old app and website of called Google Voice may be going away, but that doesn't mean that the entire system is going anywhere.
That was a good question, though.
Yep.
A friend of mine is on his way to the States as we speak. When his plane lands, he expects an email telling him to get me the Huawei Watch or the Moto 360. What do I tell him?
Huawei.
We covered this earlier. It depends on the person.
Yeah.
Probably the Huawei Watch. I mean, unless they're a big super nerd.
Big super nerd. Which, if you're, you know, asking a Q&A question on the Android Central podcast, you may be.
But. Right. If you want your wrist computer to look like a wrist computer, or if you want your wrist computer to look like a piece of jewelry, that's the question here.
Kenny wants to know what happened to the Android build for the iPhone device that was a sweet ROM that was supposed to be being built. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Jesus, what?
Perfect answer. Have no idea.
I hear the iPhone runs iOS really, really well.
Oh, Kenny's also asking about Nexus Player, and apparently Marshmallow has broken Chromecast. Like, you can't just cast things to it. I tried the one I have here in the office, and it works fine. Jerry, have you brought yours back up?
I saw you know, yesterday evening. I was having issues with cast the last couple of days on the Shield TV for potentially, I mean, related to an update to the cast receiver app. I'm not sure, but for like a couple of days, it just would not receive as a cast target no matter what I rebooted and redid, and then all of a sudden just started working again.
Now, if by chance you're using Chrome, the beta or Canary or any developer build on a computer to do this casting, I have to uninstall and reinstall that extension 10, 15 times a week because everything just stops casting. But I don't see that on any other.
The Chrome extension in general and just is a little over the top.
Hey, speaking of which, if you haven't seen it, I did a little thing this week on LG's Music Flow speakers. I snagged an H3 and
that looks like a nice speaker for $100.
It's on sale right now at HH Greg, and actually all the other ones are on sale there as well. Did we ever do a post on that? We need to.
I did a post on that.
Thank you. And yeah, it is a surprisingly decent Sonos alternative / castable thing. I mean, like a lot of LG stuff, like it's nice, but it's not too nice, if you know what I mean.
It's still $99.
Yeah, very functional. I kind of wish I'd gotten more than one speaker to really test the multi-room stuff and just make sure that works.
It's worth, they have $80 off the H5, which is, so it's 200 instead of 280, and they also have $80 off the H7, which is 300 instead of 380, so they're obviously bigger. So that's a 70-watt and a 50-watt, I think.
If you can save that much money, I mean, considering the smallest Sonos speaker is $200, then I think it's worth it.
Right.
What are the input options on those, Phil? I mean, if you're not worried about casting or streaming.
Bluetooth as well, okay. Which Sonos doesn't
do. Just aux jack in. I saw it as an Ethernet jack.
No, well, no, it does not have aux in. Does not have aux in.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to do IP-based.
Yeah. Which is all I have now, basically. Just hey. My thing about Chromecast Audio was, and if you go back and look at my review of that, which went up this week too, like, it's great if you can hide it somewhere, like hide it, you know, stick it behind something. I've got that.
They should sell it with a thing of like 3M double-sided tape.
Something.
Stick it on the back of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've got that little Samsung level whatever speaker, and if I want to leave it plugged in all the time in the kitchen, then I would have, you know, two sets of power cables and then the audio cable and basically, you know, if I could stick it on the back like a little yellow Millennium Falcon, picture that. It's kind of how it would look.
The Chromecast audio is pushed. I'm going to have to buy a new AV receiver.
Yeah.
Because on mine, if I want to plug it in, I have to do it on the front.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And one thing that I know Russell tested. Go ahead, Russell.
You just get a longer cable and run it around?
Sure.
Yeah, I could. Or I could just finally break down and...
You need to get one anyway because you couldn't plug in Chromecast, right?
But yeah, but mine's a tube. I'm going to miss it because I'm old.
Mine is a refurb and it shuts itself down if the volume gets too loud.
So if you're listening out there, tell me which AV receiver to buy under $500, because I'm not a rich man.
The wirecutter.com, dude.
Well, I also have the Android Central Podcast Listener. Okay. Cutters.
They should also tell you to go to the Wirecutter.
That's that URL is probably available.
Anything else you guys can think of? See any other questions you want to do?
Taking a look.
That was a cool, different, productive podcast, I think. Yes? No? Do you recommend Project Fi? Asks Ashish. I've had no problems with it. I mean, everyone's making a big deal out of it like it's something different, but to me it's like...
It's cellular service, yeah, guys.
You know what I like? I don't use it on my main phone number.
Right.
But it hardly costs me anything because they give you money back for what you didn't use.
Yeah.
And my bill's like $24 a month because I don't take it out with me. So if you have more than one phone, it's a great second number that you're not going to use a lot.
Be a good number for the I kind of wish I'd done it for my kids, and I might still do that. Yep. And get rid of that.
I mean, I'm excited to use it more when my Nexus 5X arrives next week, because I just did not like using it on the Nexus 6, and it was just tied to the Nexus 6 being too big. So I'm ready to get back to it. I just love the simplicity of it. Having a carrier management app that actually just works and is simple is... Like, it should not be this hard, but apparently it is. And so it's super nice. And, you know, having the seamless international stuff, seamless call forwarding, integration into Hangouts, it's good. It's good for individuals, not good if you have a family plan or if you're somebody that has wants to share a tablet on your data plan or a smartwatch or whatever. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if you're just one person with one phone line or it's a secondary phone line for yourself, it makes sense.
I think that's going to do it for this week. If you haven't downloaded our app, go do it. Go do it! I'm so happy. I can't wait to get all the other stuff in there. Now the real work begins, I think.
Yep.
This has really just been cleanup. So thanks again to Mike for coming on. That was awesome. Thanks for all the really good Q&A questions and all the really good voicemails. By the way, I keep forgetting to mention this as we are doing the voicemails, but record your voice, email it to podcast@androidcentral.com. We will play it live. It's always fun to listen. But do me a favor, just try to, sometimes people sound like they're on the side of the road, and I can clean that up a little bit, but, do us all a favor. I'm just saying. Thanks.
So rent a recording studio for 10 minutes.
Yes.
We've had people record on their watches.
I know, and it sounds surprisingly good.
this isn't hard. This is 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Jerry and I are going to be out in Texas next week.
Oh, that's right.
Y'all are going to be heading to the Big Android Barbecue, flag one of us down. I think Jerry said something about selfie sticks and throwing marshmallows at people, so I don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah, you're doing that. I am speaking locally here at a thing called I-10 Wired, which is like a regional little tech conference thingy, doing a panel or two on wearables. I should go prepare for that this weekend, perhaps. So that'll be fun. So if you're in this neck of the woods and you're there, say hi. I know Jim, who helps set that up, is a listener. So hi, Jim. How's it going? Anything else? I feel like I'm forgetting something. Do we have any contests going on? I can't think of any contests. Oh, somebody asked about that post office box that's behind me over here. That's been there for years. I know it's in it. I could show you, but you're all going to want one.
Show us.
Maybe I'll bring it out next week. It's like mugs and stuff for all the sites, I think. I just never opened it up. It was in the back of my car for a long time.
I made the mistake of taking a picture with one of those mugs in it.
Yeah.
Just got inundated. You have to send me one.
We are putting forth more effort. I hate to say commerce. That sounds so sterile and businessy. But fun stuff like that. I was looking at some...
We always get asked about it, especially, the stickers
absolutely.
And pens and pins and stuff like that.
Yep.
I've got a bunch of... pens and stuff that I'll be bringing.
No, you don't. Texas. I don't know what you're talking about.
So if you see us at the barbecue, at least come by and grab a pen.
I was looking at some shirt designs today. Very cool. You guys
kind of digging that Lloyd on a cloud that we've got for the new app logo.
Yeah, how you like that?
I need some stickers of app Lloyd on a cloud for my MacBook.
We will. I will see to that.
I will peel all my Russian space agency stickers off my MacBook if somebody can get me one of those.
Go follow us on all the things while you're around: Twitter, Instagram, YouTubes. I think we're about to hit 700,000 on Twitter. And granted, that's mostly spammers, probably, but still.
It's all me. All of it.
It's a pretty elaborate YouTube spam system.
But it is.
Send Russell $20 and he guarantees 700,000 followers.
That's what I did with that Bud fridge. I gave it a Twitter account, and every time I grab a beer from it, it creates another Twitter account and follows Android Central. So you're welcome.
All right, so next week, some of us will be around, some of us might not. We'll see. Let you know. See how it goes. Jerry, Andrew, Russell. I had to slow down. Try to remember who's here. Thank you. Everybody listening live, thank you guys. Everybody listening home later, thank you as well. Send us some emails. Send us some voicemails. We'll see you next week.
Toodles.
Have fun.
Again, we'd like to thank Braintree for sponsoring today's episode of the Android Central podcast. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Quick, knowledgeable developer support if you have any questions. Start accepting Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and whatever's next, all with a single integration. But don't take our word for it. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at BraintreePayments.com/AndroidCentral.